Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloh. When you get on an airline flight, you know they've looked for severe weather and the pilots have planned a route to avoid it as much as possible. Well, in this show, we're going to talk to folks who do just the opposite. Hurricanes are the most powerful storms on the planet, rotating walls of chaotic, embedded thunderstorms with strong winds and punishing rain. For decades, scientists have been using aircraft to fly into hurricanes, using meteorological instruments to learn all they can about the massive storm systems. We'll talk to one of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's most veteran pilots, Justin Kibbe, who commands flights into hurricanes. And then we'll talk to one of his regular passengers, Jonathan Zwislak, a NOAA meteorologist who studies hurricanes and helps to gather and interpret the data gleaned on the flights. First, let's talk to the pilot. Commander Justin Kibbe is a veteran combat pilot who now flies into hurricanes in a P-3 turboprop aircraft in the service of science for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Justin joined us from his Florida base via Skype. Justin Kibbe, welcome to Blue Dot.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So before we get into hurricane hunting, I'd like to know a little bit about your background. I saw that you went to the Naval Academy. And then tell us a little bit about your, when did you first start flying?
Oh, yeah. So I went to the Naval Academy. I graduated in May of 2001. And then I started my flight training about 3 months after that with the United States Navy. And then was winged as a naval aviator in March of 2003.
So, wow. So you graduated and started flying right at the time of 9/11.
Yeah, that's correct. Right around 9/11, I had a stash job or a temporary job at the academy post-graduation as a young ensign. And I was on my way into work. I basically had to turn around because they told us to leave the to go back to our homes and not report to work because there was a perceived threat at the United States Naval Academy. So that was right after I was graduated as a young ensign in the Navy.
And then you fought you flew combat missions over Iraq, right?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. So after I was winged in 2003, I reported out to Hawaii and flew P-3s in the Navy, and then I did two deployments with the U.S. Navy, both Iraq and Afghanistan. So I've done multiple missions overland, Iraq and Afghanistan, in the 2004 through 2007 range.
And what type of aircraft were you flying then?
That was also in the P-3, so that was in our Navy P-3s, which were primarily used for sub hunting, but for more recent wartime were used for reconnaissance and surveillance.
So fast forward, when did you transition from military flying to flying for NOAA? How did that come about?
I had completed my a tour in the U.S. in the Navy at a squadron VP-30 in Jacksonville, which is where we train all our P-3 naval aviators. And I was at a crossroads in my career where I could either stay in and usually start flying a desk, so to speak, and go that round, or research other options. Fortunately, I knew a couple folks who flew for NOAA, and it just happened that NOAA at that time was accepting inter-service transfers. So what that means is basically I could put in a request with the Navy to transfer my commission over to NOAA, and if NOAA accepts it, then I could basically wake up the next morning and be a NOAA Corps officer. So I went through that process and roughly 2009, and then in April of 2010, I was selected as an inter-service transfer into the NOAA Officer Corps.
Yeah, I don't think most people realize that NOAA is, you know, another uniformed service branch, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about it. I didn't know about it until I knew some folks, but yeah, so there's 7 uniformed services, and 5 of them are part of the Armed Service and the Public Health Service, and NOAA are our commissioned officers corps that we fall under the Department of Commerce. So not many folks know about us, but we do definitely provide a valuable mission to the United States of America.
And so NOAA understood that you're a pilot and one that's been through all kinds of harrowing experiences flying aircraft. And when did they approach you with the gig of flying into hurricanes?
Yeah, so NOAA's flown P3s since 1975 is when they got their P3. So NOAA's been doing this with two P3s for a long time, and the Navy was a pretty deep source of pilots who wanted to do something different, because we've had the experience in the Navy P3s. We've got a lot of hours and time doing that. And then NOAA has had the ability to accept inter-service transfers from the Navy just because of that ability of having a very deep logbook, if you will, of P3 experience. So NOAA's been pulling from the Navy for a while, getting experienced pilots who fly that plane. Now we're going to take that one step level and almost do the PhD level of flying, and now you take this plane and fly into a hurricane.
Yeah, speaking of flying, we've got some major fires going on here in Northern California, and I've got all kinds of aircraft flying over me, so if you hear some big engines going over, that's what's going on. So for our listeners who don't know, and for my edification, I'm pretty sure I know what a P3 is, but describe the aircraft to us. What does it look like? What type of plane is that?
The P3 is a large four-engine turboprop aircraft. It's roughly the size of a 737 that you'd fly on commercially. It was originally built in the 1950s, designed in the 50s and built in the 60s. It is, if you think about technology back in that day, it is redundancy after redundancy, and it's built like a pickup truck, if you will. It's a very tough airplane. The Navy has used it for, 50, 60 years of flying, and flying low level and in very extreme environments. And, NOAA determined that, the way the Navy flies it, NOAA can apply it and decided to start flying it, in hurricanes in the late 70s.
What is it about the aircraft that makes it perfect for flying into hurricanes? Is, one might think, well, wouldn't you want to use a high performance jet? Why is that turboprop plane better for this?
Well, the biggest thing with the turboprop plane is with it, it's got turboprops on it and it ingests air, obviously, and basically turns that air into thrust, which then turns the propellers. And it's very much instantaneous power. So when we get in certain precarious situations, when I push up on the power levers or the throttles, I get an instantaneous reaction from those engines. Whereas a jet aircraft, for one thing, they're not built as sound. They're made to fly at very high altitudes, and their jet engines have possibility of getting so much water ingestion that they could possibly flame out. Another thing with the aircraft is it's big enough that you can fly around like it's a flying laboratory. You can put instruments on. You can put different people at different computer stations on, and it's just a very robustly built plane that is as sturdy as you can get for what is now its modern day aircraft.
So, before we get into your first missions into flying hurricanes, was there some kind of specialized training that you went through just to prepare for flying these aircraft into hurricanes?
No, there was no special training. So I have a lot of experience in the P3, and I'd flown it for almost 8 years. I had a lot of hours in the Navy, but there's no trainer. There's no simulator that you can do to prepare you for your first hurricane flight. Now, obviously, you talk to a lot of pilots, and there's a syllabus that you go through once you're here, and you discuss what you're going to see in the hurricane and what to do in certain situations, but there's nothing that can ultimately prepare you for that first time that you fly into a storm.
Okay, well, tell us about that first time. What was it like the first time you flew into a hurricane?
Sure. I think anybody that you talk to who's flown in hurricanes can always tell you the first time. Mine was it was Hurricane Earl in the summer of 2010, and we were flying missions out of Barbados. So I was on the night crew, which means I think at that time we were briefing at midnight, taking off at 2 a.m. and then landing around noon or 1 p.m. So it was all the mission was primarily at night. You are with a crew complement as an aircraft commander and a co-pilot and a flight engineer who's up in the front with us. And I remember at this point Hurricane Earl was a Category 3 storm, maybe going to a Category 4 storm. So it was a relatively big storm. It was a major hurricane. And it was one of the most intense, extreme, white-knuckled flights that I'd ever been on. And it was a matter of you listening to the aircraft commander who's talking you through these certain situations as you're flying through this turbulence and this bad weather, and trusting what he's telling you, trusting what the plane's doing. So it was, I tell people, it was probably 80% scary and 20% absolutely the most amazing flying that I've ever done in my life. So I think through the years that percentage has definitely changed, and it's no longer scary. It is more, it's definitely intense and it takes focus, but it is, you definitely respect it no matter what kind of storm you're flying in.
Yes, 80% scary would not be what you'd want to be doing all the time.
No, it was not. I trusted in my abilities and what the plane was going to do and what I was being told to do as far as learning from the aircraft commander. But it was relatively scary, that's for sure.
And then how many flights have you made now into hurricanes?
That's a good question. So I think I'm going on my ninth season right now. And I would say I've probably, I know I have about 170 hurricane penetrations, right around there. I'd say there's probably been 30 to 40 storms that I've flown in, either hurricanes and or tropical storms.
Take us through what a typical hurricane penetration, the mission profile is, because, you know, I think we all know what a hurricane looks like from space. We've seen them on satellite views, these giant churning storms with perhaps the eye in the center of the hurricane, if it's a well-developed hurricane, these giant spinning monsters out in the sea. What, you don't just fly straight into them, do you? What exactly do you do? What's the typical method of approaching a hurricane?
Yeah, most people ask that question, and the answer is, the thought is, oh, you guys kind of fly in from above or do something like that. So the short answer is no. We fly in anywhere from altitude of about 5,000 to 12,000 feet, and usually start at about 105-mile legs on the outskirts of the storm and work our way all the way through. So that 5,000 to 12,000-foot altitude is kind of the sweet spot for what we're doing, whether it's research or reconnaissance. So our goal is to start on the outside, on the periphery of the storm, and fly straight legs all the way through. So we begin our legs and just fly through rain bands, working our way toward the eye wall and then eventually into the eye. Once we're in the eye, most of the time we go in there and we mark the exact center or the zero wind center of the storm to figure out exactly where that is at. It's something that you can look at via satellite, but you really don't know until a plane has been in there and figured out where it's at. And then we make our way outbound another 105 miles or so and do those legs multiple times through the storm, depending on how much gas we have on the plane and how long we can fly. So we go through the heart of the storm, so to speak, and use our vast array of instruments and radars to collect as much information as we can about the storm.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. After a short break, we'll continue our conversation with NOAA Hurricane Hunter pilot Justin Kibbe. Stay with us. And we're back, and thank you for listening. Let's get back to our visit with Commander Justin Kibbe. Kibbe is a Navy pilot that now flies for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's hurricane-chasing airplanes. Well, hurricanes spin clockwise. Do you approach them as you're going through the bands in a clockwise or counterclockwise direction, or does that matter?
Yeah, we try to make sure that we're not flying upwind of these storms because you wouldn't go very far.
That's what I was wondering.
So our researchers and our scientists ensure that the patterns are twisted or set up so the fact that we're flying them in the most efficient manner.
And are there variations with each hurricane? Perhaps the scientists want to learn something in a different about a hurricane, where you're checking something different out about a hurricane each time, or is it pretty much a standard method?
Oh, absolutely. We work with our counterparts, the Hurricane Research Division folks who are based out of Miami, and how they want to apply a certain storm that can vary. Depending on what their mission is for that day or what their mission set is, they're looking to accomplish that season. And a couple of my first years of flying, they were really concentrating on Genesis and flying these storms from their infancy as they turn from tropical waves into low pressures into something that's actually spinning. And it just depends on the focus that they're looking at for that specific hurricane season. Some other times you're looking at very mature hurricanes and looking at the progress from a small storm into a major hurricane. Other times we're looking at maybe a landfall interaction and how the storms are interacting as they approach the coast. So the research can vary depending on what the goals are for that season.
And what's the largest category hurricane you've ever penetrated?
I've been in multiple Cat 5 hurricanes, with the most recent hurricane being Hurricane Irma, as we flew out of Barbados just before it made landfall in the Caribbean.
Can you describe for us what is it like inside the aircraft in the cockpit? Is there a lot of turbulence? Are you just seeing just rain hitting the windshield? What does it look like and feel like in there?
Sure. And the cockpit, it can be, I mean, we're talking a very, if we're talking an intense turbulent storm, you can definitely hear the rain. You can feel the turbulence as the plane is jockeying up and down. You can hear the roar of the engines. And sometimes you have to pull the engines back to idle because you're going too fast. So, it's a very loud environment. And you'll hear, especially on the intercom system, as the pilots are talking, there's a lot of critical concern conversations that we're having that are short and sweet to ensure that the plane keeps its wings level and keeps the ocean below us and the sky above us.
And I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, but what's the crew on one of these aircraft? How many people fly these missions?
For the hurricane missions, we're anywhere from 12 to up to about 16, 17 folks.
And are scientists aboard during the flight?
Absolutely, yeah. So, to minimally fly the aircraft, we need is four people. But because we're a flying laboratory, we'll take anywhere from, four to six scientists on board who are actively telling us, where to go, how to adjust the pattern, and ensuring that we get them the data that they need.
And so where are they and what are they doing in the aircraft? Are they like back in the midsection of the aircraft with instrumentation that they're working on?
Yeah, they're at the midsection of the aircraft. There's multiple seats with multiple computer setups in those areas where they can look at their specific instruments that they have. They can look at the radars. They can look at internet products. They can look at drop zone information that's coming off the aircraft. So they have kind of the whole picture of what we're trying to do up there all in front of their computer screen.
And do you have many conversations with the scientists about what they're trying to find out and how you can help them and what they've learned so that you kind of get that sense of what you've accomplished?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a pre-flight briefing where we all sit down with our scientists, our flight director, who's our onboard meteorologist, and we discussed that mission for that afternoon or that evening. And then once we're flying, our flight director, who sits directly just after the cockpit, he's our onboard meteorologist. He's looking at radar, what the radars are showing, and he's also the liaison with the scientists. So he is he knows what the aircraft's capable of. He knows where it shouldn't go, and he's trying to get the information from the scientists so that we can put this aircraft in the best position available to collect that data.
And I kind of hate to ask this question, but I'm sure some people might like to know, have anybody ever lost a hurricane hunting aircraft, whether it be NOAA or in other countries?
No. NOAA flies them, and the Air Force flies them as well, and none of us have ever lost an aircraft. I'm knocking on wood right now, but hurricane hunter aircraft.
Now I feel really bad about asking that. It's like, I never asked that question, okay?
Oh, no worries. We get that question a lot, and the answer is no. We've never lost an aircraft.
How is this, is this like really a nice lifestyle for you as far as being, I know you're a family person. Is this, you know, make it pretty easy where you can spend time at home and have your flying career unlike, you know, military deployments?
Yeah, it's a different kind of flying. NOAA's Aircraft Operations Center is, even though we're not military, we are uniformed service, and our operations center is structured very much like a military squadron where all of us pilots have ground jobs. We have day-to-day jobs that keep the squadron running. The flying, you know, I'll take deployments to Barbados or St. Croix or Canada over deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan anytime. And I think the flying is definitely rewarding. It is something that, you know, we can go out and do. And when you land, you get these instantaneous results. You get instantaneous satisfaction that the flight you just flew, the data provided, went into a watch, went into a warning, helped, you know, ensured that an area was evacuated. So you're definitely out there, and you're getting beat up, but it's for a purpose, and it's for a cause, and the cause is to save lives.
How much longer do you expect to be continuing your flying career with NOAA?
That's a great question. I'd say I'm on the latter half of my career. I'm an O5. I'm a commander in the NOAA Corps. I've been flying planes actively for the last 18 years. So I'd say, if anything, I'm on probably the sunset of my career, and I'm looking to train the younger guys to make sure that they're ready, and make sure they're ready to take the keys and go out and continue the mission.
Do you ever go speak to school groups and things like that?
Yeah, NOAA does a lot of outreach. You know, there's a lot of interest in what we do and how we do it. So we get a chance to go out and visit with the community and tell people about what we do and how we do it, which is very rewarding.
So here's my question. What's kind of the most humorous or funniest question a kid ever asked you?
Probably the most humorous question. We drop these scientific devices called drop sondes. And what they do is they come off the aircraft and they fall through the atmosphere and they measure temperature and pressure, humidity and wind speeds. And you drop a certain amount of them through the storm, say 10 of them in a storm. And a lot of the questions are like, how do you get those back? And the answer is, well, we don't get them back. They go into the ocean and they become a byproduct of the ocean. We don't have a drop sonde retriever as of yet. But that's probably the funniest question we always get.
Maybe he's an aspiring business person who's going to develop a business to recover those and sell them back to you.
Yeah, he might. That's a good point. You never know.
Any advice you'd have for like young people that might be interested in, wow, that sounds like an amazing thing? Because flying is an amazing thing to do to begin with. But flying for NOAA sounds awesome, and hurricane hunting sounds thrilling. For people that love weather and flying, what's your advice? What kind of a career path would you tell somebody to embark on to maybe wind up where you are?
It's a great question. I think, you know, we're such a small niche group of individuals that, you know, we have a lot of folks, both guys and girls, who are inter-service transfers from the Navy. So, the military route is always a possibility. We also have people who are pilots who fly the P-3 who grew up in our NOAA Corps officers only, that served on NOAA ships and got selected for aviation and then worked their way up and through the platforms to eventually fly the P-3. So there's no right or wrong career path to do what I'm doing. But I'd say if you've got a love of aviation and if you've got a love of flying and storms and weather and things like that, then you know, definitely look at the NOAA Commissioned Officer Corps as an avenue and a stepping stone to get up and eventually fly airplanes and flying for NOAA. So, just keep following what you love, and eventually it definitely works out for you.
Have you ever had a chance to meet with or talk to some of like the original pilots the first ones that flew these missions?
Most of those guys are gone. When I came into NOAA in 2010, the older guys here at NOAA were had come in probably the 2003 timeframe. So it's kind of cyclic. So, the guys I talked to, the older guys, when I first came here, were the guys who flew, they flew Katrina, or they flew Hurricane Wilma. These big storms, over the last decade or so. So it's kind of cyclic where I just try to pass our knowledge on to the younger guys who, one day those guys will talk about me, maybe talking about the 2017 hurricane season, and hopefully they can retain that knowledge and still execute.
Well, real quick, what was the 2017 hurricane season like for you?
It was really busy. It was you never want to say a good busy, but a busy where we're out there and we're flying, basically nonstop for about 3 months. So it was a lot of time away. It was a trying time too. We had Hurricane Irma. Well, we started out with Harvey, which was actually a devastating storm. And then we turned around about a week later and went out and went to Barbados and started tracking Hurricane Irma, which eventually came up and, obviously did a lot of damage in the Caribbean and it had its crosshairs on South Florida. And so our researchers were concerned, it turned the course and, made a direct shot toward Tampa area. So it was a trying season. The fact that, normally we're out flying storms and providing information, and now we got a storm that is bearing down on where we live and where we work. So that was very difficult storm to fly.
Wow. And finally, what's your favorite part of your job?
I think the favorite part is the fact that you're making a difference, and the fact that like I said, you're going up there and you're doing things that 99.9% of the pilots would never want to do, but you're actually doing it for a purpose. None of us are thrill seekers. None of us have a death wish. None of us want to go do crazy things. But the fact that we are trained well, we have a very well maintained airplane. And the fact that we're professional, all of us, we know we're going to come back it's going to be okay. And even though we went out there and flew for 10 hours and got the crap kicked out of us, that information is valuable, and that information, can go out and save somebody's life.
Well, I got an idea for you. When you retire, you hook up with a gamer and you guys can develop a virtual reality hurricane hunting game for people to play.
That's a pretty good idea.
Commander Justin, Kibbe, it was just really a pleasure to talk to you, and what an honor it is. And thank you for your service to all of us chasing these hurricanes so that we can, all be safer from these, huge storms.
You're very welcome. It was great talking to you as well. And here's to a late 2018 hurricane season.
Thanks to Commander Justin Kibbe. If I ever had to fly into a massive storm, or anywhere else for that matter, I'd want him to be at the helm. Next up, we'll talk to one of the scientists who regularly flies with Justin on flights into hurricanes, NOAA meteorologist Jonathan Zwislak. He joins us via Skype from Florida. Jonathan Zwislak, welcome to Blue Dot. And I'd like to know just a little bit about your background. Were you as a kid interested in weather, and were hurricanes something that really fascinated you at a young age?
Oh yeah, I think as you speak to a lot of meteorologists, we were all weather weenies since we were born, and I've always been fascinated by the weather. In fact, on the hurricane side, my actual first science fair project in fifth grade was on hurricanes. In fact, hurricane formation, which actually ended up being what I worked on for my doctorate degree, my dissertation. So the love of weather has always been there, and I've been fortunate enough to have been able to pursue all of that passion for meteorology and hurricanes since then.
And what grade was that?
Fifth grade was a science fair project on hurricanes.
And does your fifth grade teacher know what you do now?
I don't believe he does, but if I ever saw him again, I suppose that he might be proud to hear that science fair led to something.
I think you should reach out and let him know, because as a teacher myself, something like that could just absolutely make his day.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's neat to think about, you know, fifth grade John, you know, doing his science fair project becomes his career. So tell us about how do you become an actual hurricane researcher? Tell us about that path.
Well, so first of all, I started out really pursuing the meteorology path. And for the kids out there who want to be a meteorologist, I recommend doing a lot of math, doing a lot of calculus, and doing a lot of physics, because that's sort of a prereq to becoming a scientist. And so I did my bachelor's in meteorology at Penn State and really took the research route of learning how to evaluate data, analyze data, and communicate those results. And that sort of led then going into graduate school. And typically what you want to do in graduate school is find someone who has research funding that studies hurricanes. And I was fortunate enough to go into a research group at the University of Utah with Dr. Ed Zipser, who is considered more one of the fathers of tropical meteorology and hurricanes. He's been flying in hurricanes for decades. So I had a very great mentor at Utah to pursue hurricane research and was able to continue that research until moving after my doctorate degree to Miami, first at Florida International University, now at University of Miami in NOAA.
And how did you get to be hooked up with NOAA?
So I started collaborating with some of the scientists at the Hurricane Research Division a few years ago on some research projects. And since then, I've been fortunate to be brought on board at Miami and the Hurricane Research Division to continue those collaborations. And now we're leading several projects related to the aircraft data that we can talk about here, as well as some satellite data as well.
Yes, let's start out with talking about the aircraft data, because we just talked to Justin Kibbe, who flies the aircraft into the hurricanes, and I'm assuming you've been on one of those flights or some of those flights before.
I've been on several hurricane flights. In fact, Justin and I both share that Hurricane Earl in 2010 was our first hurricane mission.
And what's it like as a scientist, as opposed to being a pilot, to be like, tell us about your first trip into a hurricane?
Well, I tell you, it goes really fast, first of all. It's not like being on a commercial airliner. Things tend to feel faster, especially as a scientist, just as the pilots are flying around the hurricane, we're directing them. And so we have to constantly be aware of not only what we're flying through at the time, but what we're about to fly into as well. So we have science objectives or instrument objectives that we want to accomplish during the mission. So we have to be always cognizant of the next steps in the flight. And because of that, it gets pretty busy up there. So, but you do have time to appreciate what you're flying in as well. And my first time I talk about how fast it was, but it's certainly quite exhilarating as well. And I was fortunate enough that my first mission was in Category 4, a Hurricane Earl, and that flight, it has what we call a stadium effect, which is when you get into the eye of the hurricane, you're surrounded by this amphitheater cloud, and oftentimes the sky above you is completely clear. And for a hurricane scientist and for someone who flies, that's kind of the holy grail of scenes that you see in a hurricane. So to be able to have that one of my first missions was incredible, because it's breathtakingly beautiful, and yet it's just so chaotic up there as well.
Wow. So that's a great analogy. It's like you're inside of a stadium, and the walls of the hurricane eye wall are the stadium, and you're in the center of it, and above you is clear sky. And the ocean down below, that just must be amazing.
Oftentimes you do see below the cloud and just to see the ocean surface, and the waves are quite visible in it. So it's a pretty remarkable scene.
Wow. Wow, that sounds awesome. I can understand that if you're a scientist, you're working hard and you've got a lot to do. And anytime you're doing that kind of thing, time goes by very fast. So that makes total sense to me. It's like you said, it's not like you're a passenger just holding on for dear life, saying, "When are we going to land? When are we going to land? When are we going to land?"
Not just sit back reading. There's constantly data to analyze and determine what the path forward is.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what is it, what kind of research do you do? Give us an idea, like, for example, on one of your more recent flights, what are you trying to learn about hurricanes on one of these flights?
Well, the core mission of our data collection is to improve hurricane track and intensity forecasts. So we work with a number of different partners, both in the government as well as in academia. So some of our primary partners are the National Hurricane Center, the National Center for Environmental Prediction, who are the forecast modelers within NOAA, and then we have a number of academic partners. And so all of us are really trying to collect the data in hurricanes to not only understand how they work, the processes that are responsible for their formation, their intensification, their weakening, but we're also trying to get data off the airplane and transmit that in real time to the National Hurricane Center so that they can update advisories, watches, warnings, and their forecasts, and then also send that data to the Environmental Modeling Center where that data gets assimilated into our global and regional forecast models. And essentially, the goal there is to improve how the hurricane looks in the initialization of the model, with the hope that that will then improve how it looks and the accuracy of the subsequent forecast. So we do core research in understanding physical processes, but also the data now is very important for us for in terms of improving models.
What is exactly your specific area of research? What are some of the questions? Take us inside your world of hurricane research.
So my area of research is both on hurricane formation and intensification. And so I am an observationalist. So I use the aircraft observations directly to analyze how the wind field is evolving and specifically also how the precipitation or the rainfall in a storm evolves. So rainfall is really one of the core sources of what we call latent heat in the storm, and that's really what is able to drive the wind field. So by analyzing precipitation and the distribution and the structure of that precipitation in the storm, we can learn how changes in that precipitation evolves to the point where we believe that the storm may or may not intensify. And so myself and a number of other folks here at the Hurricane Research Division and some of our colleagues elsewhere in universities and such, we integrate those aircraft observations with an extensive satellite network of observations as well, so that we fill the gaps in the observations we're getting from the aircraft with the satellite to get a full picture of how the wind and precip structures are evolving in the storm.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. After a brief break, we'll get back to our conversation with NOAA hurricane meteorologist Jonathan Zwislak. We're back. Let's continue our visit with NOAA hurricane meteorologist Jonathan Zwislak. What are some of the major ways that our understanding, scientific understanding of hurricanes has really evolved over the last couple of decades, thanks to these flights and other things, satellite data? What are some of the things that we understand better now that we didn't before?
Well, I tell you, we've been flying in hurricanes for research ever since the late 40s, and I think that tends to surprise people how long that we've been flying in hurricanes. In fact, our first hurricane flight was 1943, at least an intentional flight into a hurricane. So researchers have been using aircraft data in hurricanes for decades. But what we've really been able to do in the last couple of decades is take advantage of some real technological advancements in the instrumentation to get more high-resolution data that we can use to interpret both, again, physical processes and getting into the model. So things like Doppler radar, which really came about on these aircraft, at least in the P3s, beginning in the late 70s. Well, we've seen advancements in that radar to the point where we're seeing structure in the storm that we haven't been able to see before. And what I would highlight is we also, while we do have the P3s at NOAA, we also have a high-altitude G4 aircraft. It's like a business jet. And from that airplane, we're able to drop these drop sondes, which are these parachuted instrument packages that measure profiles of pressure, temperature, humidity, and wind as they fall. And those drop sondes are providing critical measurements in areas, in all areas of the storm. But what I should say is that those are being assembled in forecast models. And we have seen a lot of improvement in hurricane forecast track and intensities because of those drop sonde observations. And now we're assimilating the Doppler radar data that we get off the airplane into the models as well, and seeing improvements in model forecasts as well. So the technological advancements has really allowed us to improve both our physical understanding, but I would highlight that they're also really going into directly improving track and intensity forecasts in our models.
And it seems to me last year there really does seem to be a great improvement in our ability to predict the track of these hurricanes, because they really seem to take these erratic paths.
Yeah, tracks have really dramatically improved in the last 20 years. And again, a lot of that is not only a improvement in the models themselves and improvement in computing power, but is really also responsible because we're getting these aircraft observations as well and assimilating them in real time. And again, the drop sondes being one great example of a very powerful instrument and tool that we have to improve those model forecasts. Intensity, however, is something that we are continuing to work on, because intensity forecasts and changes in the wind speed of a storm remain a real challenge to us, particularly what we call rapid intensification events, which are events where the storm says intensify 30 knots in 24 hours. And we saw a number of rapid intensification events last season. I flew on a number of missions during those events, and they're not only challenging forecast-wise, but we still have to understand them from a physical process standpoint as well.
You know, also there's the human element behind all of this, is, you know, especially last year with what happened in Puerto Rico and Harvey in Houston and Florida. You know, these hurricanes last year especially have caused an immense amount of human suffering and economic damage. So I'm just wondering, you know, as you're working on this, you know, when you come home and you see all that unfold, that must be a kind of a powerful connection between what you're doing and what's happening.
Well, I tell you, I was on multiple missions last year before landfall. I was on the P3 and the mission before Hurricane Harvey, just before Hurricane Harvey made landfall in Texas, as well as before Hurricane Irma made landfall to Category 5 in Barbuda, and then again before it made landfall in the Keys. It's a sobering thought that, you know, you're in the hurricane and you realize that people's lives are going to be impacted, but it serves as also a tremendous motivation to get the most that we can out of these missions, because we know that data is going directly to the National Hurricane Center, where they're going to be issuing watches and warnings. They can understand what the risks and potential the storm is in terms of its landfall, flooding, storm surge, rainfall, wind. And so I mean, our goal is, again, to protect life and property, and we do that very much directly. With the data that we get off the aircraft, and then as researchers, that's our real motivation for putting in all the work, subsequent work after we fly, and also in model improvement. It's because we know that every bit that we do and every day that we work, we're getting closer and closer to learning more and improving, to get better warning for people before these storms make landfall and impact their lives.
Yes, and it really literally does save lives when people get the warnings in advance and can evacuate and take advantage of that.
Yes, absolutely. And it costs a lot of money to evacuate people. And so the better we inform the decision makers and the emergency managers, the more precise perhaps those evacuations can be.
I'm wondering, when you talk to maybe family members or people that aren't in your business and you talk to them about what you do, what is like some of the biggest misconceptions people have about hurricane scientists?
Well, we're not crazy flying into these storms. We fly with a tremendous crew. You talk to Justin, he and his crew are fantastic. The people who maintain the aircraft are the top notch. We fly some of the best maintained aircraft in the world, and so we're not crazy. It's fun, but it's challenging work for sure, and it's something that we do a lot of work, and sometimes it takes a long time of working with the data to see the payoff. But ultimately, we do get there, and certainly you talk to us in the older science institutes here, how far we've come has been absolutely incredible. But they do just mostly like hearing stories about flying in a storm and some of the experiences, and did you vomit or not, and such things.
Sure. Well, I'm going to ask you one of those. I won't ask you that one, but because Justin, told me that his first flight was, 80% scary. Have there been moments where you felt fear while you were working up there?
I've never felt fear. I've maybe felt nauseous at times, especially when you're staring at your computer screen and turbulence you probably never felt before on a commercial airliner. But there's never really a fear because you're so focused on your goal as a researcher and as a crew to collect the data and get home safely. I guess the only real thing is sometimes we might feel a little bit ill, but you get over it and you keep doing your work.
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but that really makes sense because even if you just get motion sickness to begin with, you couple that with staring at a computer screen. I could see where that really has to be challenging.
We have a little bit of a contest around here. If you do vomit, it's how many bags do you go through? And we have some people that have been through quite a number. I've only thrown up once in the airplane, and I was a two bagger, so not too bad.
And my apologies to anyone having lunch out there during that section of the program. It's okay. Hey, it's part of life and part of life of a hurricane hunter. Do you take drugs? Do you take Dramamine, stuff like that, to help?
Yeah, you don't want to take Dramamine necessarily, but sometimes you do take some motion pills or some folks have been known to take ginger pills. It kind of calms the stomach a little bit, but the turbulence isn't always that bad. It seems like it's pretty rough, but we've been in Cat 5 hurricanes where the turbulence is really not too bad at all. It's not much different than a commercial flight, but we've also flown in tropical storms where you're getting kicked around for 3-4 hours. So it's quite interesting how variable they are in terms of the amount of turbulence.
What's the sound like inside the aircraft? Can you hear the storm out there? Because I know for people who are in hurricanes on land, they always describe it sounds like a train coming and that kind of thing. Do you hear much, or is it just the drone of the engines?
Now, mostly the engines are quite loud, and where we sit on the airplane, we're actually right next to the props. So it is typically quite loud, but you can sense it, especially when you have a strong wind. I flew in Hurricane Irma last year when it was 160 knot hurricane, and I mean, you can definitely feel the effects of having that strong a wind speed on the airplane, and I'm sure as Justin would attest to, it's a challenge to fly, and you definitely feel those effects. And when it's raining or you hit a grapple, which is solid ice, which we tend to try to stay out of, you definitely notice that you're flying through it.
Grapple is like that pellet snow stuff, right?
Yeah, it's frozen pellets. Essentially, you think of a snowflake accumulating water on it into sort of a ball, and eventually it does fall out, and most people would associate that with being hail, but it does originate in smaller form above the melting layer in the atmosphere. We try to avoid that, though. There really isn't much reason to be flying through that.
And can you determine, there's grapple ahead and avoid it?
Yeah, we carry a number of radars on board the airplane. In fact, the radar is really one of the most critical instruments that we fly in the airplane because it gives us the 3D structure of the wind and precipitation. And we use those radars for not only the research that we're doing and the data that we send off the airplane, but we also use it for situational awareness. So we can look ahead of the airplane and look at where we're going into the storm and what we look for is these what we call high reflectivity regions. Reflectivity is basically a measure of the radar. You see this basically on television too. Basically, like on TV, the brighter the red it is, the larger the raindrops are. And we have some awareness of where those regions are and are able to avoid them using the radars on board.
Before we let you go, I would like to know, what are some of your parts of your job that you find really fun? And then rewarding. First, what are some of the really fun parts?
Well, I tell you, I mean, as a scientist, we do sit in front of a computer, and we do a lot of work on computers. But getting out there and flying still, to me, is it's one of the most passionate about. I think you speak to most hurricane scientists. That's what they enjoy the most. I hesitate to call it fun. I think it's fun, but the reality is these storms do impact lives, and we're aware of that when we're flying. And so it's a rather humbling experience as well. And so, our goal as researchers and both on the ground and on the airplane, and what we really get out of this is that we do know that we're on the front lines getting important data for improving forecasts, improving track, and then also get it to our partners at the Hurricane Center so that they can issue these watches and warnings and issue these updated advisories and get directly to the people that are being impacted by this. So every day we know that we're potentially saving lives, and that is ultimately why we're here, and is a great satisfaction at the end of the day for what we do.
How many people work in where you are? Like how many scientists are there that go flying on these missions?
Yeah, so at the Hurricane Research Division here at ALML, we have about 40 scientists doing a variety of things. We have scientists who don't fly. They strictly work on model development. They work on data simulation, which is the process by which we take observations from satellite and aircraft and put them into the forecast models. And then we have observationalists. And so among the observationalists, we have a number of people, maybe about 15 or 20 of us, that actually do the flying each season on the airplane and the variety of missions that we fly.
Have you been on the ground during many hurricanes where you've experienced them that way?
Well, I was born in Delaware and lived in Pennsylvania. And so my first real hurricane was Hurricane Floyd in 1999. It was rather weak by the time it hit us. So last year was actually the first time I was really in a hurricane. Perhaps Justin spoke to this, but for me, it was the first time I ever flew a hurricane and then subsequently had to ride out the hurricane on the ground. So I was in Miami with a number of other people who flew Hurricane Irma when it passed over South Florida. And that was certainly an interesting experience. Strong tropical storm force, weak hurricane winds for 24, 36 hours. But also knowing that we'd also been flying that storm all the way back since it was, even before it really became what Irma was going to be, well east of the Caribbean, it was pretty interesting to think about that while we were riding it out.
Yeah, following a storm, you know, basically from throughout its life cycle to experiencing it on the ground, that's pretty unique.
Yeah, I was part of the crew that was the first ones in Hurricane Irma. On September 3rd, I believe it was, well east of the Caribbean before it was ever going to be what it did. And then to be there, you know, 5-6 days later in the storm was quite something.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate your time today. And it was really interesting.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. We're all very passionate about our work.
Thanks once again to our guests, Commander Justin Kibbe, Hurricane Hunter Pilot for NOAA, and NOAA Meteorologist Jonathan Zawislak. And thank you for listening. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Check out and share this and past episodes on mynspr.org, or better yet, subscribe to us, Blue Dot, on NPR Podcasts. We're distributed via PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the man on the board, Nolan Ford. For all of us here, I'm Dave Schlom, reminding you out there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.